Hello and welcome to the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy podcast, also home of the Defiant Spirit and the Meaning Project, with your hosts, Dr. Daniel A. Franz and my good friend, Dr. Baruch Halevi. Today, our starting point is the idea of reductionism, because it's definitely come across both of our streams lately, and there's a lot of ways to talk about it, and we know the good Dr. Frankl railed against the idea of reductionism. His theory, his ideas, really went against the reductionistic tendencies of Dr. Sigmund Freud and Alfred Adler and the prevailing mood of his times. So what is reductionism? And before we even get to reductionism, my goodness, I even forgot. B, you're looking lovely today, man. How are you doing? It's been a while.
It's just whenever I wear black, you notice me. You know, it's like it's my sexy color.
I thought that's your only color, man.
It actually is. I told you I wanted to be a priest just for the uniform. So I'm good. I'm good. All's good. It's spring. It's beautiful. It's sunny. There's a good vibe in the air. I feel like we're just coming out of a kind of a dreary winter, and it is upon us. So let's do this. All good. Okay. So I'm going to answer your question. What is reductionism? Here we go. Political affiliation, national identity, color of my skin, my chromosomes, my sexual orientation, nationality. Did I say that? I mean, the list goes on and on.
Let's add in from my perspective real quick, one that we talk about, your diagnosis.
Diagnosis.
Right? Too many people coming into the office today. Something's wrong. I don't feel right. So I Google the hell out of it. And I come up with this list of symptoms. And I'm like, oh, that's it. I am this diagnosis.
And I am depressed. I am anxious. I am scattered. Whatever it is, I am, I am, I am, I am. And for me and for Frankl, and I know for you too, come back to, Moses asked God a question, which is pertinent whether or not you believe in the Bible or want to believe in God. Moses says to God, what's your name? And Moses, and God's response is, Ehyeh, which means I am. That I am, that I am, that I am, I am, dot, dot, dot. And we live in a world that wants to fill in the dot with a blank. And that's reductionism. Mm-hmm. I am, fill in the blank. That's it. You've reduced yourself and the entirety of your existence to that one thing. Usually an ailment, sometimes a role, sometimes a quality, sometimes a personality, sometimes an Enneagram type. But the moment you fill in the blank, you are reduced.
And why is that such a bad thing? Why is reducing ourselves, right? Human beings, we want to understand things in simple terms. We seek to understand ourselves and others. And reducing to one word, to a label, seems helpful sometimes.
It helps us make sense of the world until it doesn't. And it's actually a betrayal. I was listening to Morgan Freeman. Somebody asked him, what's it like to be a black man or something? He's like, I don't know. It's the melanin in my skin. I'm sick and tired of talking about it. I'm a man. I'm a human being. Let's talk about that. Right. And I can feel that, like, in me, like I am a Jew, right. Or I am an Israeli, or I'm an American. It's like these either or binary scenarios that it's like Chief Justice Potter said about pornography. It's hard to define, but you know it when you see it. You know it when you've been reduced.
Mm-hmm. And I just realized why that you love that statement, and it comes up so frequently in our conversations, because I finally caught by chance the clip where Ted Lasso himself actually states that. I'm like, oh, that's why B doesn't pay attention to laws in Congress or pornography. Ted Lasso said it. So you just keep bringing it up.
Not laws in Congress anyways, but okay.
Well, not laws. Yeah, right. So. Although there are some interesting ones changing as we talk about, the cannabis industry that you were formerly a part of and other substance use industry. But reductionism, it's natural sometimes when we seek to understand. But I remember early on, middle school, something like that, talking about stereotypes and stereotyping and why it's dangerous and why we shouldn't do it. Malcolm Gladwell's famous book, Blink. It is in our nature, it's in our habit to make an assessment of somebody within the first, I believe it's 7 seconds of experiencing them. But it's wrong, right? It's not healthy for us to reduce somebody, to think we know and understand somebody else or ourselves just based on a label. When I talk, going back to the idea of people you know, the internet is a wonderful, powerful, and horribly dangerous thing, right? We have all of this information, the combined information of human history past several thousand years at our fingertips. And so when we think there's something going on with us, when we think we have an ailment, we seek to understand. We talk about Dr. Google, right? Dr. WebMD. You get on there, you find what's, you know, you can match what's you're not feeling right about with any symptom on it. And then you have this label. You've thereby reduced yourself and think you understand when, in my experience, I believe in our experience, B, you're not that diagnosis. We are facing a time of such existential angst that we need to address that. Not a label, not a diagnosis, not depression, anxiety, PTSD, ADHD, and all those other letters. We need to address the true facts of these existential issues we're facing.
And you know, like there was a, story about a farmer who did an experiment and he grew pumpkins and he put different size containers on each pumpkin as they were little, and they each grew to the square container, the triangle container, the octagon container, the small container, the big container. And that's, to me, the problem is we start creating these invisible, it was Dan Millman who said, most of us are living in prisons of invisible bars, right? And we've imprisoned ourselves. And don't give me, you know, your BS. I didn't say the word, so now you don't have to get explicit on the YouTube. Don't give me the BS that other people put me in the box. Nobody puts you in anything. Like, you allow yourself to be in that box. And to me, that's the Franklinian shift. Take back your power to choose your response, because no grown man, grown woman can be made to feel anything. We choose to feel that. We choose to take on the label. We accept it, right? I like that Morgan Freeman. I don't accept your labels. They're not me.
Yeah. So how do we break out of that box by, you know, if we seek to understand ourselves in the simplest terms and thereby reduce ourselves, sooner or later, it starts to feel horrible because you only see yourself as that label, as that issue, as that diagnosis, as that whatever. You have to do the work of seeing yourself as a whole person.
Yeah. I think it's challenging language. I mean, you know, I love language and I do believe language shapes our reality. I was working with a guy, great man, who is an artist, except he doesn't do art for a profession. So he doesn't allow himself to call himself an artist. And we were working on, but you're an artist, whether you sell it or not, you're an artist because not because you're Picasso, because you're you and you're expressing your ideas in the world as this medium. And you could see when he allowed himself to call himself the artist, his world started to expand, right? It was no longer this sort of prison of identity, but he just sort of was like a coming out of, I am an artist. And now he's doing more art because of it. So I do think it starts with language.
I love that idea. It starts with language. And I think in our times, we have such reductionistic language, especially sadly among our young people. It seems in their desire to understand themselves, right? Adolescence, young adulthood is such a tumultuous time. Hormones and issues and peer pressure and social strata and all this, that you naturally feel off and you want to understand why. So you have to find a label. And the labels that young people are finding to identify themselves today are very limiting. All of a sudden we have octagon pumpkins in our high school because they only grow to fit that box. And we can help. We can help ourselves. We can help each other. We can help our young people. But I love that idea. More expansive language. Looking at the diversity and not bringing the true diversity, not the diversity of these single labels.
Yeah, here's another one. I work with a lot of people in the afternoon, moving into the evening of life, and they're retiring or they're retired. And this word, it does damage to the psyche. We've talked about this before, I think, but retirement, right? It's tired, it's retreating, it's withdrawing. And I say to them, is that true that that describes reality? They're like, no, I've never been more active and engaged in my life. So let's get rid of this word. Mm-hmm. And I say to them, there's no word in the Hebrew Bible for retirement. It's not a concept. And if it's not a concept, then we don't have to grow to the shape of that container. And you know, I just think that it starts with renaming it.
You know, that's a really interesting idea. And I would assume it's only since the Industrial Revolution of 100 or so years ago that we have this idea of retirement. Because prior to that, people, you know, you work to survive. You till the land, you build things, you make things to barter and trade. And I've always, you know, ever since I was young, I felt, man, you find a job that you enjoy, you never want to retire. And I still feel that way today. You know, and we live in this time of opportunity where we can work from various places. You and I can, different people can, different professions can. That, why wouldn't you keep doing that? Especially if you're helping people, if you're transcending yourself, if you're reaching out and doing amazing things. Now, you know, certain people, well, I don't even know, teachers, right? Like, they have to be in a place to teach, but do they? If you're a teacher, you can do it from anywhere.
Or we're just defining profession, you know, vocation by getting paid. I was just reading Robert Greene's book, Mastery. And he talks about vocation, avocation, getting paid and not getting paid. But vocation means vocare, means voice. It's expressing your voice in the world. So maybe you make widgets all day and that's not your voice. But then you have an avocation that pays the bills to allow you to go do underwater basket weaving, if that's your thing, and expressing yourself in the world. So maybe you don't get paid anymore, but you're still out in the world expressing. Then you're not retired, right? That's the point, is we've limited our identity, especially as men, to what we do, what we get paid for. Sorry.
Yeah, we talk about that often, that we've reduced ourselves to a career. I believe, you know, women in general have a better handle on being multifaceted, and we know they're better at multitasking and maybe not reducing themselves. So I do have to comment. I am surprised that you had underwater basket weaving in Nebraska, being that you didn't have much underwater. Most people know that I minored in underwater basket weaving at the Harvard of Muncie, Ball State University. We had a prolific underwater basket weaving program, and it was, I got pretty good at it. But unfortunately, when we don't use those skills very often, I just can't get the weave right in the water anymore. But
you know, some skills are meant to be lost.
I have decided to abuse the people around me, their ears and their sense of good taste by strumming on a guitar instead of underwater basket weaving. But it is pretty horrific. But it grows. I mean, that is a skill worth having. I think that also, you know, we joke about this, but in all seriousness, right, continuing throughout life to study and develop skills. I spoke to a young man yesterday, wonderful gentleman, who, you know, seemed aimless, right? Decent job, enjoyed it, but feels like, man, there's more to life. And, you know, we all have this feeling from time to time in life with those existential dynamics of recognizing, here's where I am, but man, I feel called to something more. And continued reading, education, and all of its forms today can definitely help us do that. And, you know, you don't have to go and you know, spend on an expensive degree, or you can find a teacher, a mentor, a coach, a program, a certification, so many ways to continue to grow and learn. And I feel that, you know, you're missing out on life if you're not finding ways to do that, to develop your underwater basket weaving or your horrible guitar skills.
Well, I think you and I, you spoke about one time, Jonathan Pageau, is that his name?
Yeah, Pageau, yeah.
Pageau. And he has this great little series on the end of the world. I forgot what he called it. But, you know, there's always ends of worlds. It doesn't mean that we won't be here tomorrow. It means there's an end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine. Name that too.
REM, baby. Good stuff.
There you go. So, and you can see it in our society. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Like universities, we're coming to the end of a run, I think, where the university is this thing that we do. And people are starting to say, well, what's the value of it? Get out of it. It's not teaching me the skills I need for the marketplace, or it's not worth the amount that now they're charging and the return on the investment. And people are starting to chafe against the edges of this box, right? This thing around the pumpkin, and we're growing to the size of the pumpkin as opposed to shattering it and say, what do we want to grow into? And maybe it doesn't entail the university.
Yeah, I love a good smashing pumpkin or shattering pumpkins, as you said it. But you're right. In our times, many kids today are asking, what is the value of a university education when I can go online and watch less hours of YouTube and have less pressure of writing papers about it to understand the same things I'm getting in university. The difference is the university gives you a piece of paper that some jobs value and say, okay, we'll hire you because you spent 4 or 5 years, or in my case, 9 or 10 years at university to get those pieces of paper. The landscape's changing. And you know, young people today are refusing to be reduced to that label of I went to such and such university and have that piece of paper. However, I think, you know, I don't know if it's a political situation or economic situation. We know that we're facing some pretty frustrating unemployment amongst, you know, the 20s and 30s year olds. And even I've recognized some 40 and 50 year olds who are struggling to fit into the current job landscape.
Well, I've been working with a young man who didn't go to college, but he studied computer programming. I don't know if it was formally or informally. He's good. He has no shortage of job opportunities, right? None. He can get any job he wants anywhere. There's a shortage of him out in the world. You know, now he's 25. He's got some skills, whatever. He didn't go to college. I know people who've gone to college, have these master's degrees and whatever it is, and they're, you know, struggling with unemployment. So that's the end of the world as we know it, because we're training for something that doesn't exist. There will always be structured programming education for certain things, like becoming a doctor. But most of the people I work with and know are entrepreneurs, and school was one big fat waste of time. Mm-hmm. You know, they would have been better served to get out in the world, find a mentor as an entrepreneur, learn the skills, maybe take a math class or, you know, whatever they needed. Does that entail getting $500,000 into debt at Harvard for a degree they're not using?
Right. Yeah. MBAs and underwater basket weaving masters, two of the most prolific and unused master's programs in our times right now. I do see, unfortunately, as the economy changes lately, a lot of MBAs out of jobs. Seth Godin, you know, I love his writing. Offers so many different ways to be trained and educated in marketing and business rather than spending that $500 or, you know, I know the University of Notre Dame near me, wonderful university, love that place, but $250,000 for a, you know, 2-year program just seems unbelievable. And many people will tell you it's not necessarily the education, but it's the who you get to meet, the people you connect with there. Well, again, the power of the internet allows us to connect with so many different people in so many different ways.
Well, coming back to labels or boxes, you know, then you have the infrastructure and the people in it who defend the box. You know, we're going to hear from tenured professors who think that we're doing a disservice to academia. But with all due respect, they're part of the problem because they're the swamp. They're entrenched in the system. They're there to protect the box. Mm-hmm. And whether it's academia, whether it's politics, whether it's sports, you name it. Right. The box is protected by a certain group of people. And there's always this sort of revolution that happens inside boxes.
Well, I think that goes to our initial point. There will always be people out there who seek to reduce you because it either empowers them or helps them make their money or whatever it might be. Or maybe they're just mean and nasty people that want to see you reduced. So what can you do about it? If you're living in that land of unemployment or diagnosis or just struggling, feeling less than, feeling reduced, you know, we talked about some ways to improve that. Get out there and learn, grow, do something different. Take that underwater basket weaving class. No, in all seriousness, what are some of the classes out there? What are some of the ways people are growing and learning in your experience, B? I know, you know, it's not always about going back to university. For some people, there's so many, you know, older adults go to online school now. They can learn a whole different set of skills. If you find yourself in the job market or not out of a job, out of the job market, how do you get back into it? How do you fight that reductionism?
You know, for me, it's as simple as starting with looking at our language. So I have clients do an exercise. I am dot, dot, dot. And you got to fill in every single descriptor, role, a piece of your identity onto a piece of paper. I am a dad. I am a husband. I am a lover. I am a romantic. I am an artist. I am every single thing. And then you start to see, holy S, it's hard for me.
You dude. Are really pushing me to hit that explicit button when I put this on YouTube.
It's hard. I'm an 8. It's like I was born to swear. You don't have to, if I say holy yes, you don't have to hit the explicit button.
You know, it just depends on the YouTube rules. It is really hard to tell with all their bullshit.
No way. I make my defiant stand on that issue. You do not have that explicit. But again, it's like, just start there. Start with the boxes that we've allowed to be put upon us.
Yeah. I think that would be a challenging exercise, is to identify what boxes you're in. How have you reduced yourself? How have you been reduced? And how do you, then do you engage that defiant spirit and work against it? How do you grow outside that octagon box to become a fully ripened pumpkin? Education. Training.
Well, education. Seeking. What do you mean by education?
Well, in all of its forms today, right? Your search for meaning is a great example of non-formal education where people can come, search, learn, engage, and discuss. I know you and I both talked about multiple training programs we've been a part of. You know, if there's something you want to learn, somebody is out there teaching it online that you don't have to go to a location. Maybe you can. You know, as I was saying, the other benefit of formal education, of going to a university, is the people you connect with. Well, we have so many ways to connect today. You can find like-minded people online to, as you and I did, to continue to have conversations and then to make different introductions and meetings and engagements and things like that. There is no, I guess, again, with the power of the internet and the society we live in, the positive parts of it, there's no reason to allow yourself to be reduced today.
Yeah, you can get an entire master's degree education just by watching YouTube videos and doing, you know, doing your own work. I mean, like, it's amazing the content that is available for free. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that education, I cut you off. You were saying education.
Well, yeah. How do we prevent reductionism? Doing those exercises, seeking to understand ourselves in different ways, you know, looking at, first of all, how we've been limited, how we feel reduced. But then how do you fight it? You grow, you learn, you seek meaning in other ways. Education is just one way, but how else? How else do we go about seeking meaning?
I've been talking to my two kids in college about, because they're both saying sort of the same thing. They're getting weary of the same routine. Mm. And I said to them, you know, you have narrowed the entire college experience down to like your fraternity and this and that. And you have an opportunity to say yes to life. Like, just go try things. Get out of your comfort zone. Go to the opera. Like, you know, go to an art show. Do new things and expand the box. So just saying yes to opportunities. In my experience, is the universe starts presenting you opportunities. If you start saying yes, more come your way.
So you actually use this language with your children. You talk to them about their defiant spirit and saying yes to life. You quote Frankl to your kids and that works, huh?
I have defiant spirit tattooed on my arm. Like, there's no way around this thing.
Poor children. I've been caught talking a lot lately about my poor daughters having a therapist for a father, because we do use this language. And you know, my kids know this kind of stuff. And we talk, I've had the same conversations, right? Like, I just don't like this campus. I want to go to a different campus. Like, you're not going to like any campus if you don't get out there and engage in it, right? College campuses are all the same, just different buildings, but there's going to be people and organizations and things to do. And if you're, I don't know, I've said this before when I talk about, you know, men and their substance abuse issues. Well, I started using because I was bored. How in the hell do you have time to be bored? I know I said it. How in the fork do you have time to be bored, right? And it's funny. I was just chatting with the running man the other day, looking at upcoming schedules. We're recording this in the early part of spring. And I was talking to my wife about it too. Our weekends are booked from now until August. Why? Because there's so much cool stuff to do, even in Farmville, right? Where we try to get out of Farmville, but there's so much good stuff to do. We found one of my favorite 90s artists was playing at a little theater in the middle, again, in Farmville, Michigan, this past weekend. I said, hey, let's go do this. And, you know, she is not always one to say yes to life, and I can't use that language with her. Maybe you can be. But, you know, she said, it's Sunday. Do we want to? I said, absolutely. We got done. We came back. She said, that was awesome. I remembered some of those songs, and you actually doing a terrible job of singing them when we were dating. I said, yeah, it was pretty cool, wasn't it?
Who is this artist you speak of?
Matthew Sweet. He was a great 90s artist, kind of pop indie artist back in the 90s. Similar with the Lisa Loeb era. Somebody just presented that to me, an opportunity to go see that. But, you know, great things to do. There are so many things to do in the world and easy ways to find it. I can't remember. I was talking to a client about that this week or last week. And like, I'm just bored. I can't, I need to find stuff to do. I need to be out in the world to meet people. I said, then use social media. Social media is always telling you things to do. I know that's how we advertise your search for meaning. If you are feeling reduced, get out there and experience something. Let the universe guide you, show you, share with you these different things that you can do so you're not feeling reduced, but don't allow yourself to be reduced.
Another Frankl principle that I think I would use on myself or with my kids or whoever I'm talking to is, actually, it's not Frankl, it's his student, Edith Eger, who was also a Holocaust survivor and logotherapist. And she said, a victim says, why me? And a survivor says, now what? Mm-hmm. Right. And just really challenging ourselves. Like, how in my own way am I saying, why me? Poor me. We all do this. I do it. Mm-hmm. And then I catch myself and I'm realizing I'm reducing myself into this box. Why me? Do I have, you know, no matter what I eat, I seem to be getting fatter. I just am. I don't know what to say. I'm getting the spare tire midlife. And now I say, now what? Well, now how? Maybe I need to mix it up and stop doing my same routine and, you know, take up rowing or go biking or challenge myself. And now it's like no longer, oh, I'm, you know, I'm middle age and I'm getting older and it's hard to blah, blah, blah. I'm not fetching, as we say in Yiddish. I'm now using it as an opportunity to break through the box.
Absolutely. And folks, now we know why B wears black all the time, because he is afraid of that middle-aged belly. So we it's know black slimming. Is very slimming on you, buddy. Absolutely.
I usually wear stripes too, but yes. Okay.
Well, we do need to get you in a cardigan here at some point. But yeah, to your point, right? If you're struggling, you know, it's really interesting to hear you say that. I don't know what it was about this week or yesterday. I left the office, I got in the car, and I just felt like this overwhelming sense of sadness, depression. I don't know what it was. All the way home, I'm just like, man, what is, I can't shake it. Am I reducing myself? Do I feel reduced? Am I just taking on the weight of too much of my clients? I couldn't figure it out. And I got home and Michelle says, you just, what's going on with you? I said, I don't know. She said, how can I help? And still, I don't know. So what did I do? I said, you know what? I'm just going to go for a walk out in the yard. I'm going to go just kind of be in the trees, be in nature. And man, I'll tell you what, it's amazing how that cured everything. And we know, science will tell you, being in nature can be so restorative. But we have to be intentional about it. Going back to, if you're feeling reduced, don't be a victim of that. You know, say, now what? What can I do? And even regardless of your age, B, no matter how old you are, you have the opportunity to go out and grow and learn and do something different and use that defiant spirit to fight that reductionism.
Amen, brother. I think that's a good set of tools to send our listeners off into the world to break free from the invisible bars that we all put up around us, grow to the size of our container. And every once in a while, we need to check in and look at those and say, how do I want them? Sometimes the box, you know, sometimes I want the box. Like, I like some of my boxes, but do I choose to have the box, or am I, you know, stuck in the box?
Do not be that octagon pumpkin. Smash that pumpkin. Get out there and grow and do amazing things. And if you need help with that, you know B and I are here to help. And so is Dr. Elise Cortez, our partner in the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy, and a whole group of people that are really, they're digging what we're laying down, brother. That's your search for meaning. You know, slow to grow. And look, I say that intentionally, right? It is growing slowly. If you have any interest, get in it now, because you get our time a couple times a month in our social platform. And we are continuing to build content. So you can check that out at themeaningacademy.com. Look at your search for meaning. You can find out more about B and I there and Dr. Elise and everything else we have going on. So one more reason not to allow yourself to be reduced, not to feel that existential dread of the middle age belly or whatever B was describing there. But get out there and use these opportunities. And as always, B, what do we say at the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy? Get out there and live your life.
Even if your belly is growing like mine, you can still live with meaning and purpose and resilience.
Amen. Take care, everybody.
Take care.